Jaylen Brown driving.
Now, it's time to talk Celtics.
Celtics come roaring out of the gate.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show with Gasper and Murray. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Game on lock for sure.
All right, hour number two here. Gasper and Murray. Murray's up at the lake, so you got me, Arcan, for the next 2 hours here. And we spent that whole first hour on the NFL and on the Patriots. Now it's time to get to the NBA and the Celtics, which is where I would have started if we didn't have the same sort of formatting issues that we have on this program, Gasper. Sorry, I always forget the way you guys do this. But, 12 o'clock, Celtics playing game four tonight against the Toronto Raptors. They should be up 3-0. They aren't. Let's first talk about that play at the end. Because I heard you, for a second on with Mike and Tony yesterday.
Yeah.
And who do you have? Whose fault was it on that last play?
Well, it's a number of people's fault, but I would put Daniel Tice and Jason Tatum before Jaylen Brown.
Okay, I have Daniel Tice number one and Jaylen Brown number two.
Okay, here's my issue. So again, it looks like, and B Rob can weigh in on this. He's covered the Celtics. He knows what they do end of game. To me, it looks like they're in a matchup zone, and I thought that Tice really strayed too far from his area, leaving Marc Gasol, and he basically went to Van Vliet when Tatum had Van Vliet
right
in his zone, was matching up, it was fine. And so Jaylen Brown didn't want to leave Gasol wide open, and so he stepped to him, and then great pass by Lowry, and it gets done. Number two for me is Tatum, because I thought that his attempt at communication, just the point to Jaylen Brown as OG Anunoby, who started out in Tatum's zone, right, runs the baseline and goes to the corner. That's not good enough. It was a half-hearted point. I read something today, I can't remember who wrote it, basically saying, I think it might have been Adam Himmelsbach of the Globe who broke it down, and he saw what I saw. It doesn't really appear that Tatum says anything vocally, or if he does, it's clearly not demonstrative enough to communicate to Brown that, hey, watch this guy, he's going to your area. So that's why he's number two. And then Brown for me is number three. And the reason he's number three is because on the play, he ends up guarding like three different guys,
right,
while Tice and Tatum are just kind of floating. And I understand Tatum's floating because that's his zone, but I just felt like it doesn't matter what the defense is on paper, Arcan. At the end of the day, when you get into the game and you're seeing guys left uncovered and wide open, it doesn't matter if it's a zone or not. You can't leave some guy wide open. And so they put Jaylen in a tough spot where he ends up at times matching up and rotating on three different guys because of a team breakdown.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree with you there. I think Jason Tatum, I didn't know that he didn't say anything. We were watching the game, in here, so I wasn't sure if he had said something. I saw him kind of pointing. You saw Marcus Smart pointing too, but I think he was pointing out the pick that Gasol set.
I agree.
And, when Tice moved over with Van Vliet, that was it. That broke the play right there. Because Tice staying with Van Vliet opened up the middle of the floor. There's half a second left. He could have lobbed that right into Gasol. Gasol dunks it, and then you go into overtime.
Yeah.
Instead, I think Brown sort of, he didn't do it perfectly.
I agree.
But you stay in the middle with Gasol, and you make Lowry make a perfect pass over the top of Taco all the way to the other side of the court, which he did, and that's unfortunate. But he wouldn't have had to do that if Tice had just passed Van Vliet off to Jason Tatum.
I agree.
Which is what he was supposed to do.
Yeah.
You stay in the middle. And then if he tries to make a cross-court pass, Jaylen Brown probably picks it off. They probably don't even make that pass because it's covered. I mean, that was the problem right there to me, is that Tice got way out of his zone and sort of forced Brown to fill in for him. And then when Van Vliet cut back towards Lowry, you saw Tatum and Tice standing there guarding nobody.
Guarding nobody.
There was no
was
one
my
in
biggest
their side
issue.
Of the court.
That was my biggest issue with the play. It's like those two guys are guarding nobody, and I know it's not man-to-man, but they ended up basically guarding nobody. And poor Jaylen Brown cycled through three guys and gets blamed. And I also throw Marcus Smart in there because, he's sort of the quarterback on that play.
Right.
And I think he doesn't get a lot of blame, and he's behind Jaylen Brown. But to your point, I agree. It's unclear to me on the play. He was the last guy that had a chance to signal to Jaylen Brown, you need to get to the corner and cover OG Anunoby. And it's really unclear to me what he's pointing at.
Right.
I have no idea what his communication was. Was he telling Jaylen Brown, watch this pick from Gasol, or was he pointing to the corner? I can't tell. And if I can't tell, then I feel like Jaylen Brown probably didn't know either. So if Marcus Smart's the head of the snake on that matchup zone, and he's the guy responsible for the communication, and he's the guy that told Jason Tatum, hey, you get Van Vliet, and
right,
I'm switching off here, then he was the last guy that could have saved the day and told Jaylen Brown to get to the corner. And maybe he did, but whatever his attempt at communication was, it wasn't good enough.
Yeah. B-Rob, yes?
I agree with everything you guys are saying here. I think you're also letting one guy off the hook here.
Who?
Taco?
Brad Stevens.
Ah. Oh, okay.
Mm. 0.5 seconds left. Matchup zone. This is the stuff that happens with a matchup zone. Their tendency is to play a matchup zone, and Toronto called this play knowing that. And on top of that, Christian, you just mentioned Taco. Guarding the inbounder in that situation, period, doesn't really do too much. Are you better off one game earlier in the end of that Rockets-Thunder game? Houston had a guy turned his back to the ball handler, and they were able to stop a play in a similar situation there with, you know, 1 second left. So right. In that situation, especially if, you know, we saw how far back Lowry was able to get from the sidelines when he threw that play in to get it over. It was a tremendous pass. I mean, the execution was great, but I think when you go zone in that spot and have a guy, you throw some guy, a rookie into the game in that spot, I didn't love it.
Yeah, well, I don't really know what he could have done differently. I mean, his whole job was to just stand there with his arms up. I was thinking maybe you put in Robert Williams because he's a better shot blocker. His timing's a little bit better, and he's not the same height, but he's tall enough that he would have bothered Kyle Lowry. I don't know. They also made him back way up, and Lowry was able to back way up because there was no scorer's table there.
Yeah, I know.
Row, like
it's a huge
there is at the Garden, which was a big, big difference, and allowed him to get the ball up over Taco's arms, which go up to about, you know, 11, 12 feet there.
I'll say this on B-Rob's point. I think that's an interesting point on Brad. And when you do go back and watch the play, you know, Taco, once the ball's like inbound, like he didn't do anything.
Right.
So it was kind of like 4-on-5, and that is an interesting point. And I'll also say the other thing is, I understand, B-Rob, what you're saying about what Houston did, but I'm telling you, Kyle Lowry, and if Taco's in there, it's like Kyle Lowry's just going to throw it off Taco's back, catch it, and launch a three and hit it. You know? Like, yeah. Kyle Lowry is such a crafty player. I don't know. I mean, would he have enough time for that? Maybe not, but that's why they probably guard it, because I'd be nervous. Like, Kyle Lowry is that dude that would throw it off Taco's back, catch it, shoot a three, and it would go in.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's he's definitely got some playground moves.
Clock would have run out, though. 0.5.
That's
my question. So would he not have had time to do that?
Not time.
I mean,
be clean.
Ananobi, and I'll give the clock operator all the credit in the world. I saw that shot go up. I thought there's no way he got it off in time. I watched every single replay.
Yes, it was. He got it off.
He got it.
Yeah, he did.
And the guy started the clock right on time.
Yeah,
they didn't wait long. I mean, that was done about as well as it possibly
yeah.
could have been, which it should be too, by the way. There's no fans. I mean, all you have to do is just press the button and then, you know, get it going there. But that was all done pretty well. I'll give him credit.
Can I ask you a question? And
sure.
Maybe you plan to get to this. You are in the A chair. You're the host. I'm in the number two chair, so I don't know what you have on tap for the Sports Hub Celtics show. But do you subscribe to the theory, and I'll throw this out to B-Rob too, do you subscribe to the theory and the spin that this is somehow a good loss for the Celtics?
No. No, I do not subscribe to that at all. How could it be a good loss? They could have gone up 3-0, and not only that, but they let Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet shoot themselves back into the series, and I think that's the worst thing that happened. Like, they've done a great job on Siakam. They've been doing a great job. I thought Smart and Kemba had done a great job on those two guards, and then all of a sudden you let them back in, and with a win nonetheless, too. I'd be okay if they shot well and you still beat them. But not only did they shoot well, they won. Siakam's going to wake up at some point. Ananobi's got to be playing with a ton of confidence. And now you got Lowry out there lighting you up in the second half. That is not a good thing, no matter how you slice it.
Yeah, I mean, I basically have nothing to add to that because you said everything I was going to say. I mean, you know, the first two games, Lowry, Van Vliet, Siakam, 7-for-42 from three. And now you're right. Van Vliet and Lowry have been activated. And I just don't see how you can say that's a good loss. If you win that game, the series is over. The Raptors are demoralized. They're not even really sure they want to be in the bubble, you know, due to the very important social justice protests and things that are going on. Now they're re-engaged. They believe that they can win the series. And game two was a pretty close game. You know, they Marcus Smart did Marcus Smart things, and the Celtics won that. Like, I don't think this series is as much advantage Celtics as people think it is. I think people are like, oh, that was good. They got that lost, and now they're just going to win in five. Toronto could have won game two if Marcus Smart didn't go off. They steal game three. This could become a real series now. And that's to your point. Siakam hasn't even woken up yet.
Yeah. Siakam's been terrible.
He's sucked.
I
frankly.
Said Siakam's been Tyrus Thomas with a pea coat for these first three games, and he has. I mean, he's been really loud. No offense, I know you like pea coats. Like, that's what Pascal Siakam's pretty much been here. He's been Tyrus Thomas. He hasn't done anything, and he's one of their best players. But Lowry and Van Vliet weren't playing well either. I mean, no. Toronto didn't even crack 100 points in those first two games, and now you let them back up off the mat, and you let them
totally agree.
Really shoot their way back into some confidence. And that's, it's not like they're back home in Toronto and you got to go there and Jurassic Park and all that stuff. You're playing all the games in Orlando. It's not like you're going to have some big, you know, big swing in the, in emotion and home court advantage or anything. But just letting that team back up off the mat, I think, is a real mistake, because they've been great against every other team other than you. You have their number, and now you might not have it anymore.
Yeah, and you know, look, Van Vliet hit 5 threes. He's 5 of 13 in that game from three.
Yeah.
And I just gave you the numbers for Lowry, Van Vliet, and Siakam in the first two games. Combined, those three guys hit 7 threes in 42 attempts. And Van Vliet cans five threes in that game. I think the confidence is back. I didn't think it was sustainable that those guys would shoot that poorly the whole time. I didn't think it was sustainable that Marcus Smart would shoot 55% from three and average 20 points per game in the series. That's what he did in the first two games.
God, was he bad in game three.
4 for 15, 2 for 9 from three. So those things shift. Water finds it its level. Those things even out. All of a sudden, you're in a real series. So again, you know, I don't know how B-Rob feels about this. I just feel like it's you know, I love the Celtics. I grew up rooting for the Celtics. We're invested in the Celtics. But I got to say, man, sometimes the fan base, like, I don't get it. I feel like it's peak green teamer to somehow look at a gut-wrenching loss, an opportunity where basically you were going to put the final nail in the coffin of the Raptors and say, oh, this is a positive. This
That's
is a good
thing.
Loss.
It's a good thing.
Yeah, this
everybody.
Was good. I'm glad we lost. Oh, this
While
worked
you're rocking
out.
Back and forth.
This worked out really well. I don't get it.
Well, Chris, here's the thing. This Toronto team doesn't have a track record of coming back from 2-0 series.
Except for last year. Right?
Yeah, that's a good point. For against the Bucks last year. yeah, I know Kawhi Leonard isn't there, but yeah, these guys, it's championship DNA here. And, you know, Kawhi's gone, Danny Green's gone, but everyone is back from that team. Lowry is the head of the snake that we, you know, kind of willed them to a win in that game three. So I'm, you guys have nailed this. This is, I mean, we're going to find out a lot about this team tonight, but at the same time, I could easily see this series getting dragged out a ton.
Yeah. You know what really gets to me? You know what really pisses me off about that game and the way it ended last night? Was the play right before that. That Kemba Walker pass to Daniel Tice, which was just, oh, Marona Mia, that was so nice. Oh, my God. That was like a no-look. He looked right out at Marcus Smart and then hit him with a bounce pass through like four guys, like through their legs.
That was a thing
right
of beauty.
He looked like Magic Johnson out there.
Yeah.
And then it was kind of funny. Like, I thought that play looked like a Magic Johnson play. And then Lowry's inbound was like a LeBron pass. Like, those are the kind of passes LeBron makes. Like, cross-court, perfect, lands right there in the three-point, you know, position, ready to take that shot. Beautiful, beautiful passing at the end of that game. But, man, when Kemba hit Daniel Tice and Tice dunked that ball, and then Taco checked in, I was doing the Geno dance all around my living room. I mean, there was no, it was over. I was like, this is unbelievable.
I jumped
They're
going
to go to the
seat.
NBA Finals. This is amazing.
I jumped up out of my seat when Kemba threw that pass. It was just such a great pass with the game in line. And here's the other thing I'll say to Celtics fans. Do you still think it's a good loss after you watch Miami go up 3-0 on Milwaukee last night? Do you still feel like it's a good loss? This conference is there for the taking.
Yeah, it really, really is. And, wow, what a fraudulent group those Milwaukee Bucks are starting to look like. We'll get to them and some other goings-on in the NBA, as well as your calls on the Celtics and the Raptors. Game 4 tonight at 6:30 right here on the Sports Hub. That's all coming up right after this.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show. This is Jaylen Brown. Boston Celtics basketball, 98.5, the Sports Hub. It's an hour dedicated to your Celtics. Chris Gasper, Jim Murray, the Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Celtics by two. Lowry will trigger the inbound. The Raptors do not have a timeout. 5 tenths remaining. Van Vliet is on the floor, so is Siakam, Anunoby, and Gasol. Lowry has it. 5 second count begins. Taco guarding the inbound. Lowry lobs it all the way across court. Anunoby gets it away from the game, and he got it. OG Anunoby beats the clock and the Celtics in game three.
That's how it sounded here on our airwaves. Sean Grandy, Grandy and Max there on the call. And, well, what can you say? They made a tremendous play, no question about it. The Toronto Raptors earned that one. You know, they earned that one. They didn't cheat the Celtics out of anything. I think that was one of those instances where you do have to, in some ways, tip your cap. That was a tremendous, tremendous pass and a great shot there from Anunoby. And they did it right after getting punched in the face by Kemba Walker and Daniel Tice. To recover from that with your season on the line, I mean, you do. I know yesterday Mike said we don't tip our caps on this program. You have to a little bit there. I mean, that was a tremendously executed play, and you got to give it to Nick Nurse too. I mean, what a coaching job that was. Even though I don't think that was what they were planning on doing. I don't think Anunoby was even in the top three of options.
Well,
there,
I think
right?
they said he was the fourth option.
Fourth
on the
option,
play, right?
Okay, yeah.
And Lowry held it for a while. But I like B-Rob's point that, you know, Nick Nurse knew what the Celtics were going to use there, what defense Brad Stevens was going to employ, and he went with the play that had multiple options there, and he outcoached Brad Stevens on that play. And I think that brings up a larger point for me, which is that I think overall in the series, Brad Stevens has outcoached Nick Nurse. But what's interesting to me about the Celtics and their history is that in series where Brad tends to get matched up with a coach that can match wits with him, mm-hmm. the coach doesn't have to outcoach him, but just it's close enough, whether it's a Budenholzer or a Nurse or somebody like that, those tend to be the tougher series for the Celtics. There are a lot of, like, you know, he coached circles around Brett Brown.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons they always beat the Sixers. But when they end up in a series with a Budenholzer,
Spoelstra,
somebody like that, it seems like those series are a little bit tougher for them when they lose that huge coaching advantage they normally have with Brad.
Yeah, 617-779-0985 is your phone number. I see your Celtics calls lined up. Let's get to them here. Dean is in Shrewsbury with a thought on that last play. Go ahead, Dean.
You can't blame Brad for that play. They've been going to a diamond zone with little clock time all year round when it's out of bounds. You have to be able to execute that. They should have been prepared. They've done it a lot. And, you know, Nurse on that play, you shouldn't be able to go over the top of the diamond zone. I don't think he should be credited for that at all when the Celtics just messed up the coverages.
But, yeah, I mean, Daniel Tice messed up the coverage,
they
Dean,
did,
I would say. But,
But why did the mess up happen? It happened because of movement on the Raptors' play with Ananobi. I do think you have to give Nurse credit. And if you know, it's sort of the gamesmanship, right?
Mm-hmm.
And B-Rob said it. I mean, Nick Nurse is the NBA Coach of the Year, and he won a championship last year. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure he knew what Brad Stevens was going to line up in and what they've been doing all year. So it was just a coincidence they had Ananobi move like that?
Right.
Come on. Let's give the other team some credit, too. I do agree with this point about the Celtics not executing, and I put the majority of the blame on them. But for my taste, that call was a little too disrespectful to Nick Nurse. And if Nick Nurse were the coach of the Celtics and Brad Stevens were the coach of the Raptors, there's no way that call would, you know, be saying the same thing.
Yeah. Jake in Boston, I just tried to put you on, but I think I hung up on you by accident. My bad. If you want to call back, you can go ahead and do that. That was my fault there as I go for the Felger hat trick myself. it's the Felger hat trick. When you hang up on someone who's on hold by accident, when you cut off a caller and then say, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to do that. And I forget what the third thing is. But anyway, Jones hit all of them on Thursday.
Oh, isn't it like asking the producer to do something? Or
yeah, that could be it. Okay. Asking the producer to do something or not listening when someone says something, yeah. Saying the same thing.
Asking for a cut that you didn't tell the producer you wanted.
That, yes,
and expecting it to play immediately.
Right, like the second before he's even done requesting
yeah.
it, yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, Jake in Boston, that was my fault. If you want to call back, go ahead. 617-779-0985. Let's go up to New Hampshire, talk to Jimmy. What's up, Jimmy?
Good afternoon to you guys. I expect the Celtics are going to just come out with 100% effort tonight. I think we all should. Every fan listening should have confidence in this team because we're going to play our best game of the season tonight because we're angry and we're better than that team. So I predict we're going to win the next two games, and we're looking forward to the Heat, guys. The coaching aspect, what Budenholzer does, it really amazes me. Can you explain to me why he doesn't just tell his guys to stay with the outside shooters? Like, don't worry about helping. If you watch their games, their guys are all helping off the three-point shooters. It's like infuriating to hear that Budenholzer's a good coach because he doesn't have a clue what he's doing.
Yeah, well, Budenholzer's getting pantsed right now by Eric Spoelstra, no question.
I think Spoelstra's, I'll be honest, I was not a Spoelstra fan when he first got that job, but I think he's a very good coach.
He is.
Budenholzer has his system. It's given the Celtics some issues in the past, too. So when you look at, I think that Milwaukee plays the way they play. You have to adjust at times, but I also think, and B-Rob might feel differently about this, I think Milwaukee sort of came in with a calculated gamble in this series against Miami. And I think Miami is a different Miami team than they've been in the past with Tyler Hero in there and Duncan Robinson. They're sort of built to knock down shots. And I think coming into this, Milwaukee was like, no, you know, we're going to dare some of these guys to knock down shots. And they are. And that has worked against the Bucks.
Yeah, 100%. This is the perfect team. If you're going to give up three-pointers and pretty much everyone on that Miami team outside of Bam will take them, then, and you have a guy in Bam to, like, match up with Giannis, it is the perfect formula right there. And I don't know. I mean, have you guys seen the minutes that Giannis and Middleton are playing in the series?
Yeah.
Like it's, 35 a game.
It's strange. Yeah. It's strange they're not going any higher than that. Also, you know, that's kind of how the Bucks were designed, too. The Bucks are a bunch of shooters with Giannis in the middle. I mean, even Lopez can shoot threes. George Hill and Bledsoe and Wesley Matthews and Middleton. And, you know, off the bench, you got Kyle Korver and, you know, all the Pat Connaughton.
Over the hill guys, though.
Yeah, they are. I mean, they are for the most part over the hill, but they are spot-up shooters. They're guys who can do that. And that's what the Bucks' MO was for, I don't know, the last 2 years. Yeah. Giannis drives in the middle. He kicks it out. Someone hits a three. Rinse, repeat. I mean, that's been going on for a long time. It's interesting to see Miami using that exact same strategy and really sticking it up Milwaukee's backside with it.
Yeah,
you know?
I think the other part of it, too, when you look at it, I think another playoff disappearing act from Eric Bledsoe.
Yep.
That's hurt the Bucks.
Classic.
Classic. And on, classic, on the flip side of it not being classic, this guy, Jimmy Butler is knocked down outside shots. And I think that was part of the calculated plan for Budenholzer and the Bucks. Make Jimmy Butler knock down outside shots. And he's done it. And it's changed the complexion of the series because now you have those other shooters that we mentioned for Miami, and if we've seen Jimmy Butler before in the playoffs, we saw him with Philly. He's a streaky shooter from the outside.
Right.
You know, he can get it going or he can be ice cold. He's had it going in this series, and I think that's just changed the complexion of the entire series.
Yeah. I mean, game two, he didn't play well, but it was still enough, and they still ended up winning that game with all those crazy fouls at the end. 617-779-0985. Jake in Boston is back. How you doing there, Jake? What's up?
I think it's time to shift expectations on the Celtics. I know what happened in game three, but given the other series, I think coming out of the East is the only acceptable option. And I know Miami's had their way, but I still would expect the Celtics to beat Miami.
I expect them to beat Miami too.
Yeah, I agree.
If they get past Toronto, they should not stop before the NBA finals. They should make it to the NBA finals.
Yeah. We're in agreement, Jake.
On the Bucks. Imagine being a Bucks fan right now, because I'd be absolutely livid. Your team had this window with the game's best player, who they drafted out of the draft purgatory at 15. Mm-hmm. I think the Celtics are at 14 this year, by the way. And you've gotten consistently better year after year. You opened up a new building. You brought in said superstar's brother. You look to be a contender for the future. And you may even have had a play with the Supermax and had you made a final run and proven it. And you kind of threw it all away. You know, this protest, whatever you say about it, it distracted the Bucks. It kind of took the Bucks mentally out of their role and their rhythm, and they were the most locked-in team I saw during the regular season. And this is your relevance. This is your one shot at relevance in the last two decades. That franchise has been mostly irrelevant for the last 50 years. They have one title in, 52 years. And the league tilts towards the coast, guys. You know, 50 years ago, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar said, no thanks, but no thanks to Milwaukee. And Giannis is about to do it again. So if I'm a Bucks fan and I was rolling and my team kind of threw it all away for one reason or another, I would be absolutely livid, livid. And, you know, good for the Celtics being able to take advantage of the opportunity. But if I'm a Milwaukee Bucks fan, or if I'm sitting here in Wisconsin and I'm looking at those athletes as uniters maybe 3 weeks ago, it may have gone the other way. It may have completely backfired on them, because that was a total quit job in this series. And it's going to have an impact on people who watch basketball in that state. It may kill that franchise, guys.
It might. You know what, Jake? It might. I don't think it has anything to do with the protest,
though. Yeah, I mean, I don't need. I mean, at the game after the protest, they smoked the Magic.
And also, they weren't, you know, they lost game one against Orlando, and that was before this whole thing.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, honestly, I don't think they've played very well or been locked in since the bubble.
Since the bubble started.
I mean, they're kind of like the basketball version of the Bruins.
Right.
You know,
they're going to tell me, like, the Miami Heat and the Celtics, these other teams that have all done well, aren't interested in the press.
Nobody has spoken up more about racial injustice in the bubble than Jaylen Brown.
Right.
And the Celtics won their first six playoff games. So what kind of distraction is that?
Yeah, I mean, I know George Hill was very vocal. George Hill was one of the players who said we shouldn't even be here. And he said that more than once.
Yep.
So you want to throw it all on the, you know, on the shoulders of the backup, not even the backup, like the third string point guard on that team, and say he's the whole reason why this is happening? I guess you can do that if you want to. He's been pretty vocal, but not more vocal than Jaylen Brown. Brown's gone out there every single day and said something, and he's played well, and the Celtics have played well. So I don't buy the protest as a reason. Now, maybe the fact that it was in Wisconsin and it was so close to home that the Bucks were more affected by it. Okay, well, then tell that to the Kenosha Police Department. Don't tell that to Milwaukee for being affected by this traumatic thing that happened. That's not really fair. I don't know. I mean, we'll see what Giannis ends up doing. It sounds like it's an open secret down there in the bubble that he's out of there and he's probably going to Miami.
Yeah, and I was just going to bring that up, and I'm curious. If he goes to the Heat and the Heat eliminate him with the Bucks, is he going to get the same degree of contempt and disdain that Durant got when he left OKC to go to Golden State after Golden State rallied from 3-1 down to eliminate OKC?
I mean, he should, right?
I didn't think Durant should have gotten what he got.
I thought he should. I thought he deserved it. I think Giannis would deserve it, too.
But this one, it would be interesting to me because it's different, assuming, unless Miami goes on to win the championship, but it's like, you know, Miami, they have Butler. They have a bunch of basically role guys. It's not like you're going to...
You're not joining a 73.
Yeah, you're not. It's not like you're like a made man when you get there. But I'd just be curious if people are like, oh, you can't go to the team that eliminated you. Oh, that never... Charles Barkley wouldn't have done that. You know, Isaiah Thomas wouldn't have done that. So we'll see.
Yeah. All right. 617-779-0985 is your phone number. Back to your phones right after this.
Jim Murray, the Sports Hub Celtic Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub, Arcan in for Murray here, Gasper and Murray, 617-779-0985. That is your phone number. We're with you until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Celtics basketball coming your way at 6 o'clock with the coverage. Grandy and Max there, as I believe. Who's up next, McCone or McCarthy? Who's after us? Do we know, B-Rob?
I believe it's McCarthy, but I'll
McCarthy. All right, McCarthy with 4 hours of rage for you from 2 till 6, and that'll take you right into NBA basketball. McCarthy has been, beside himself with the Red Sox. He's just, it's, because he's one of the few people, Gasper, who still cares about the Red Sox, still considers them like an actual team worth following, like a story worth pursuing. And he fights for him and stands up for him, and now he's lost all hope. So you'll get McCarthy at 2 o'clock. I don't know what he's going to talk about, but probably won't be the Red Sox. We're talking Celtics with you here on the 98.5 The Sports Hub Celtic Show. Myself, Chris Gasper, Brian T. Robb back there as well. Let's get to your phones and talk to Sean, who is over in Mattapan. Hello, Sean.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call. Regarding whether or not this was a good loss or a bad loss, obviously, in my opinion, there's no such thing as a good loss. But I wasn't crushed by this loss because there were so many positives that came out of it. You know, I mean, Kemba, we saw cardiac Kemba. You know, after there was so much speculation about whether or not he was going to be himself, he played like an all-star. Role players made big plays. Those vicious dunks from Time Lord and that dunk from Tice at the end. And it was a good bounce back game for Jaylen Brown after he had bad shooting games in the first two. So those are all positives that came out. And as a cherry on the top, we bought ourselves a couple of days for Gordon Hayward to come back. So I wasn't crushed by the loss because of that, but I did have one other quick point that I just wanted to make.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now I think, I guess the Raptors were favorite to win the series, and I'm not sure exactly why, because the Celtics just have superior players. And one of you guys was talking about how, you know, Siakam is going to come back, but are you really sure that he's going to come back? I mean, look, this guy, I think he's proven that he's a bit overrated. He played, you know, he was half of what he was during the regular season, during the bubble, and he's been half of what he was in the regular season the first few games.
Right.
And you know this guy, he's been playing organized basketball for like 6 years. And I don't believe that he's that guy. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah, maybe. I mean, he averaged 23 a game in the regular season. He was one of the most improved players in the league the last 2 years.
Yeah.
I mean, there are guys that don't get it done in the playoffs. We've all seen that. Guys that have to, you know, look, Kemba was one of those guys where people were like, hey, can this guy do it in the playoffs? And it's thumbs up or thumbs down. But I wouldn't completely dismiss Siakam as a player. He might not be good in this series, and you might be right. Maybe he's not ready to be the man in the playoffs, right. And that would definitely play into the Celtics' hands. But to just dismiss his talent and dismiss him as a player, I think that's a mistake.
Yeah, he's a good player. He might not be ready to take over the mantle and be that guy down the stretch for the Raptors like Kawhi was last year, but I don't think that's really what they're asking him to do. I think they want Van Vliet and Lowry to be that guy and for Siakam to just sort of do his thing during the game. He just hasn't been able to do that.
No, he hasn't. I mean, in the regular season against the Celtics, sorry to cut you off, in the regular season against the Celtics, he shot 50% from three and average 22 a game. I mean, if they get anywhere near that, it's a different series. So I understand it's a playoff series, but it's not like Siakam, you know, has played like crap against the Celtics this season. He has not.
Yeah. I'll say this. If you want to talk about things you can take away from this game that were positive, I tend to agree with the caller. There were some things. Kemba was terrific. That was might have been his best game in the bubble so far. I thought he was
so
excellent.
Good. 21 in the first half.
Jaylen Brown with 19 and 12. Like, he had a fine game. Blocked a bunch of shots, too. Like, I really like Jaylen's game as well. Tatum and Marcus Smart were bad. I think we can all agree on that. But I thought the bench played really well. And I don't say that very often because the bench doesn't really play that well very often. But between Ojeleye, who only played a few minutes, Cantor with 4 points in 4 minutes, I thought Grant Williams looked pretty good. I thought Robert Williams looked very good. He had 7 rebounds in 14 minutes. Every bench player scored at least 3 points, which is, again, not something that happens that often. I was very encouraged by what I saw from the Celtics bench. If they can keep that up, then you can shoulder a bad game from Marcus Smart or even from Jason Tatum. I mean, listen, Tatum was not good in that game, and they still came within a point. And that, I think, is because of the bench and their contribution.
Yeah, and I thought Tatum's passing was really good. The 6 assists, he threw some great passes in that game. Yeah. That's another plus. Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, the bench was good. There are definitely some signs. I think the Celtics should win the series. I think they're the deeper, more talented team. You know, and I'm not trying to be negative, but I think that sometimes in the Celtics world, things are overly optimistic or they're really just looked at from one, you know, perspective. So let me flip the script a little bit.
Okay.
You know, if you're Toronto, you're down 2-1 in this thing. Mm-hmm. You got away with one. You should really be down 3-0. And you look at it and you say, positives for us. Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet got going. Siakam still hasn't really done his thing. OG Anunoby's been good the whole series long. We got a decent game from Gasol, who woke up. And oh, by the way, Marcus Smart turned back into Marcus Smart, and Robert Williams turned back into Robert Williams. So those were guys in the first two games. Robert Williams was averaging 10 points a game in the first two games and didn't miss a shot. Marcus Smart, as I told you in the first two games, was shooting 55% from three and averaging 20 points per game. Are those two things on the Celtics side of it, if you're Toronto, do you look at that and say, that's sustainable, that's going to happen the entire series?
What's more likely, that happens the whole series or Pascal Siakam starts playing better?
Pascal Siakam starts playing better.
Obviously, that's more likely to happen.
And that's my point.
Yeah.
And by the way, I still think the Celtics are going to win the series.
Yeah.
I just think if you're going to look at the positives, you got to look at it from both sides. And what I'm not hearing from Celtics fans here is, hey, you know, it's not fair for us to expect Marcus to average 20 a game every game of the series and knock down all those threes. But, yeah, Siakam sucks, and he's going to play like this the whole series, and I don't think he's really that good. And I'm exaggerating. That's not really what the caller was saying. But I'm just saying, what are the odds of Marcus Smart shooting the lights out the entire series and Siakam being hot garbage the entire series? Like, those two things happening throughout the entire series.
The other thing, though, in terms of Rob Williams, Cantor stole some of his minutes last game in that second half. That can't happen again if I'm Brad Stevens, because for the 4 points he scored, that's how Toronto got going offensively, is they put him in the pick and roll there. And so in this series, the Celtics offense is 25 points better when Rob Williams is on the floor versus him on the bench. I know it's a very small sample size there, but the lob threat and even the passing too of Rob Williams, that's been a kind of a plus too. So I kind of roll with him and Tice more going forward in this series and, you know, maybe even give him more of a chance.
That makes sense. Totally makes sense. And maybe this is the series, like you said, just from a matchup standpoint, it makes sense. And Robert Williams will be that guy. He was obviously very, very effective in games 1 and 2. But, you know, I think in summation, is it realistic to expect him to play that way and Smart to play that way? And that's going to be every game of the series and Siakam to play the way he's playing. Because to me, those were things that really tipped the series in the Celtics. I mean, let's be Smart, like, single-handedly basically won game 2.
Yeah.
I mean, they were down 12 points in the fourth quarter and he went off in a way that he's capable of doing, but that's not going to happen every game. Like, Smart, like, stole a game for you with that. That to me is not sustainable.
He shot him back into the game,
But Smart didn't score for the last, like, 8 minutes of the fourth quarter. Like, that, there's already some revision. Because he did. He shot you back into the game, and then it was tied up. But it was really Kemba towards the end who started hitting the shots down in the last 7 or 8 minutes. Which, by the way, I give Marcus Smart a ton of credit for that. Because Smart hit those 5 threes in a row, then he missed the sixth one, and then he didn't take another shot. Old Marcus Smart, not old Marcus Smart, I guess younger Marcus Smart, I feel like, would have just kept chucking. He thought, well, I made 5 in a row. I'm just going to keep going. I'm obviously hot. I'm gonna make this happen. And he didn't do that. He didn't shoot them back out of it.
Yeah.
He deferred to Kemba. He deferred to Tatum, who had a great game, too. And, you know, that they ended up holding on to win that game. Marcus came out in game three.
He was old smart in game three.
Right, yeah. He came out in game three and thought he was still hot from game two.
Yeah.
He wasn't. I mean, he had an awful game.
I mean, the good thing about him is that he doesn't have to score points to have a great effect in the game. I mean, that's one of the things I love about him. And it's just a bonus when he scores like that.
Right.
But, I mean, it had a big part in game two. Here's what I will say on a positive note after this loss. I do think, again, I've said this before, the playoffs don't really start until you hit adversity. Now they've hit some adversity. So I think this is where the rubber meets the road. Now I think we get to learn something about this Celtics team. I think it's easy to look at last year and pin it all on Kyrie. I think he deserves blame. I think he deserves a majority of the blame. But the problem with last year's Celtics team is they just had a mentality of being front runners. When things were going well, nobody was better at boasting and banging on their chest than the Celtics. But when things didn't go well, they tend to turn on each other or feel bad for themselves. I don't think this team is going to do that. But now we have a chance to see how they respond to adversity and whether it was really all Kyrie or it was, you know, some guys on this team who maybe sort of are just younger guys and have to learn how to win and learn how to win in the NBA, which is obviously a process. And, oh, by the way, I don't know. I didn't send this to you guys. I should have. But did you see the Athletic story where Jason Tatum says he still talks to Kyrie quite often?
Yes. I did not see that.
Did you guys see that one?
I got that, yes.
Did you, B-Rob, did you read some of the quotes from Tatum in that? They're not horrible, but he basically admits that he was, like, really hung up on individual awards and, like, how after he made the All-Star team, he could breathe this year. And, like, he was all geared up about making the All-Star team.
Man, Jesus.
There were some quotes I read in that where I was like,
I hate all of that.
I read it and I'm like, this isn't bad, but it just shows that, you know, there's still some maturation that has to happen in terms of when it comes to being a superstar and fitting being into a superstar into winning.
Yeah, there's no question about that. But hopefully he just got that stuff, you know, off his mind with when he did get into that All-Star game. That won't be an issue for him going forward. But yeah, there's no question that, especially when you look at last year and things like that, maybe coming into play a little bit too much in terms of how he wanted to play.
Yeah. I mean, listen, Jordan went for those awards too, and he took it personally when he didn't get them. And that was a big, he got obsessed with all that stuff too. But that's Michael Jordan, you know, like that's, and he also won a bunch of championships. Jason Tatum should worry about winning the championship first, right? Get that ring, and then you start worrying about all-star games and, you know, MVPs and player of the years and all that other stuff.
Let me give you a quote from him. I was really consumed with that, making the all-star team, and maybe it was too much. So he recognized. It was just good. Especially after every game, I was like, damn, am I going to make it? Am I not? Well, you know, what if my chances are shot? Once I finally made that team, I could just play. My confidence got higher. So, again, not horrible, but I think he maybe was overly sort of, you know, focused on that.
Yeah.
So, you know, here's another one. Kai is like my big brother. We still talk to this day, and we've talked a few times this playoff. So he's talking to him now. He always encourages me to be special. Having that relationship with him and having somebody like him in my ear at a young age, it means a lot.
Okay.
So he's still talking to Kyrie
a
lot, you know, talking to him in the bubble, talking to him in the playoffs. So you might think Kyrie Irving, Celtics fans, has no effect or influence on your team. Oh, but he still does.
Yes, he does, on your best player. 617-779-0985 is the phone number. More on the Celtics and on the NBA, what happened last night to both Giannis and LeBron. Tough nights for both of those guys right after this.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show.
This is Jaylen Brown. Celtics basketball, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Excitement is building for another banner.
Round for three, got it.
The Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Coming up on 1 o'clock here on the Sports Hub, Arcan in for Murray, Chris Gasper alongside B-Rob back behind the glass, taking your calls at 617-779-0985. Let's get to the phones here, Gasper. Talk to Brent, who is in Shrewsbury. He has a thought on both Brad Stevens and Marcus Smart. Go ahead, Brent.
Hey, guys. So I heard one of you say that over game one and game two, Smart shot 55% from three.
That was Gasper.
And
that was
averaging
me.
20 points, right? And I know that's not consistent. There's a negative side. Jones would probably rip this take to shreds. Like, RK would know better than anyone. But my point is, I think he was first-team all-defense either last year or the year before. I think it was last year. He was, like, the first guard chosen. So, and, like, we know his offense is all outside the three-point line, right? If he goes in the three-point line, he's passing or he's shooting threes for the most part. So when he does shoot like that and he's a first-team all-defense guard, I mean, it's kind of worth the project, I think, where Stevens let him shoot threes for years when he was a rookie shooting like 25% a year, basically. That Stevens deserves a little nod for that.
Yeah, I guess, Brent, but I also sort of look at it. It's not like he's a good three-point shooter right now. You know, last year, what was he, 36%? It's the highest it's ever been by, like, a lot. It's usually down in the low 30s, you know, and I think in the bubble so far, it's, what, like 34, 35, B-Rob, do you know? I mean, it's not.
But that's average, though.
That's average, I guess, but it's not like, okay, give him the ball. Let's feed this guy and get him going from three. I mean, that's not, you know, that's not the type of numbers or the type of guy that puts up numbers like that. You don't do that for. You do it for a good shooter. He's just not that good of a shooter. He's streaky, and when he gets on a hot streak,
great.
You feed him the ball. But, I mean, those are few and far between, aren't they? I remember that game back in January where he had, like, 11 threes. What was that against Houston?
Like a record, yeah.
Yeah, that was tremendous. I mean, he was great in that game. Feed him in a game like that. But that was the last time I remember him really shooting well, and that was almost last year. So, you know, that's sort of what I mean. When Smart gets hot like that, yeah, that's great. Feed him the ball, and we all talk about it. But that can't be the plan. That can't be the game plan to feed Marcus Smart and hope he gets hot from three-point range.
For sure. And I think a huge part of his game now, Christian, to your point, it's like smart shot selection, like knowing when he has it going, but then also not taking 10 or 12 on a night when he doesn't have it going. And, you know, he's done a pretty good job of managing that throughout this postseason. You hope it continues in game four.
Yeah, you certainly do. I'll tell you this. It was not a good night last night for the two faces of the NBA, and I'm talking about LeBron James and Giannis Antetokounmpo. Oof. LeBron James getting held scoreless in the fourth quarter of Game 1 against the Houston Rockets. It's Game 1, and it's LeBron, and I feel like this happens every single year on every single team he's on. He'll have one awful game in, like, Game 1 or Game 2, and everyone's like, uh-oh, LeBron, and then he just comes roaring back for the rest of the series and destroys everybody. He kind of did that to Portland, and I think he's probably going to do it to Houston, too, but getting held scoreless in the fourth quarter, that made me sit up and pay attention, because usually you don't see him get completely shut down like that. As for Giannis, I mean, he almost had a triple-double. It's not like Miami completely solved him, but he doesn't look like himself. He doesn't look like an MVP.
No.
And, you know, the defensive player of the year there is wants no part of Jimmy Butler, huh?
No, wants no part of Jimmy Butler. He shot 7-21 from the field. I mean, we're seeing the same. He's struggling from the free throw line again.
Yeah.
It seems like whatever it is about the playoffs, I don't know what it is.
Giannis took 7 threes in that game. He missed all 7.
Yeah, his shot, shot tends to leave him in the playoffs. I don't know if it starts at the free throw line and then works its way into his head in his regular shot, or if it's the other way around. But, you know, for Milwaukee to win anything, he has to shoot better, particularly at the free throw line.
Yeah, that's going to be a big part of it, because he'll get to the free throw line. And I really thought you were going to see the Milwaukee Bucks in this game, and it was the opposite. I thought you were going to see the Bucks get to the free throw line at will, because they're down 2-0. I feel like the NBA probably wants to keep Giannis in the playoffs as long as they can. And instead, Miami shot, 34 free throws to Milwaukee's 21? Like, I saw that and thought, holy crap, like, they're not even trying to fix it. Like, they're just letting it happen. They're letting it play out. In fact, they're calling it the other way. And if Miami, you know, I think Miami was much stronger going to the basket.
That's what I was going
to
say.
And
yeah.
You know, Jimmy Butler was just unstoppable. So, you know, when you have a guy going like that and he's getting calls, you can't just stop. But still, Milwaukee, I mean, they were clunky on offense. I felt like even, you know, Giannis with all those assists, and Middleton had a bunch of assists, hardly anybody else did. Wesley Matthews, 0. Brooke Lopez, 0. Bledsoe had 3. Like, they did not move the ball very well, and guys weren't really hitting their threes either. What, they shoot like 30% from three-point range? Milwaukee can't win that way. They just can't. They got to shoot better, and Giannis has to be able to get to the basket more.
Yeah, he does. There's no question about that. I mean, you know, he did get to the free throw line 12 times, but 7-21, I mean, 33%, that's not going to get it done, you know, for Giannis. And there's just not enough help there I like Chris Middleton. He's been okay in this series, but they really need more from Bledsoe. Wes Matthews is what he is, but it's sort of the Bledsoe, Hill, who was decent last night, Kyle Korver, maybe a little more Dante DiVincenzo. But you look at it and you wonder, are they just built as a regular season team? Mm-hmm. You know, do they just not have enough guys that can get and create their own shot besides Giannis and Middleton? And even Giannis in creating his own shot is kind of limited. I mean, he can create his own shot getting to the rim, but if he's not knocking down jumpers or threes, there's only so much he can do, and teams just stack the paint. So now it's like, okay, we have like 1.5 guys who can create their own shot, and it's hard to win that way in the NBA, particularly in the playoffs.
Yeah, like the Knicks in the 90s were a really good regular season team for the most part, and then they get to the, you know, they get to the playoffs and either lose to Reggie Miller, they lose to Michael Jordan, or they get to the five, they lose, but like they'd always ended up, you know, coming up short, even though it seemed like they had everything going for them. They found ways, teams found ways to beat them in the playoffs, and it seems like Milwaukee has really shown a blueprint now of how to stop Giannis and how to stop everybody. I mean, it also doesn't help they're not shooting the ball well. But Miami's playing great defense on them. That is a good, gritty defensive team there. And they also have guys on offense who can knock down shots. And that used to be Milwaukee's calling card, and Miami's completely usurped it. I mean, Miami shot 40% from three in that game. They were doing everything that Milwaukee wanted to do better than Milwaukee was doing it, including their best player taking over in Jimmy Butler. So, yeah, Milwaukee, I mean, I think they're obviously done. They're down 3-0. I think that's going to be a real stain on Giannis's legacy, especially if he leaves right after this too.
I know.
If they get swept and then he takes off and goes to Miami, is that the same as Durant to Golden State? Not quite as bad, but pretty bad. I mean, that's still pretty bad. Los Angeles Lakers, by the way, speaking of pretty bad, LeBron James scoreless in the fourth quarter. Should we even react to this? Is this just part of the LeBron show where he takes the first couple games off and then goes turbo mode in the last four? I mean, is that just another example of this here?
I think that weird stuff is happening in the bubble without home court advantage. We've seen that. I mean, both the number one seeds have struggled, not to the same degree, but obviously they both lost their first games of the playoffs, and I just feel like this was an outlier. This was anomalous. I don't think you're going to see LeBron struggle this way throughout the series, but who knows? I mean, it's been weird. That's my point. There have been some strange outcomes, I feel like, in the bubble. When you take away the home court and some of the favorites, it just really feels like it's leveled the playing field in some of these series. And Houston was riding high after beating OKC in seven in a tough series, and the great defensive play by James Harden at the end, the block to secure that. They were riding high and coming in hot, and it seemed like the Lakers just kind of were going through the motions, particularly LeBron.
Yeah, all right, 617-779-0985 is the phone number. Final hour coming up. We will do five questions with Chris Gasper, even though Murray's not here. That's coming up next hour. Right now, here's the Sports Hub headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.